Hello, welcome to Base Camp for Men. I'm your host, Tony Rizak. This is a show that gives you insights and resources in how to live a more courageous life. We look to assist you on your hero's journey in any way that we can. Truth is our compass, humanity, our tribe. Welcome and let's get started.
Hello, Base Campers. I hope you're all doing well. One of the things you may have noticed over the years is how much I enjoy interviewing friends of mine. As much as I pride myself as being a good interviewer of guests whom I just met a few minutes before showtime, there's an intimacy and ease that comes when I really know my guests, and such is the case today. She's a friend of mine who just wrote a book. It's called Circling Love, and it is a deep, funny, authentic inquiry into the question of what is love. And today we cover such topics as why you don't have to like someone to love them, why are we so often kind to the world, yet unkind to ourselves? And for those that have had traumatic upbringings, does this actually sharpen our ability to love more, or does it hinder us? We cover all this and more in this far-ranging conversation. And now, on to our sponsor, and then to our excellent guest. Enjoy the interview. Today's episode is brought to you by Stand Up Now Apparel. Stand Up Now has amazing designs centered on God, family, freedom, and patriotism. They use only the softest cotton in their designs and have gear for the whole family. Something for everyone, Base Campers. I know you're going to love their products. Go support them at www.standupnowapparel.com and use the code BASECAMP to receive a 10% discount and free shipping. And now, on to our interview. My guest today is my friend Noel Rudy. Noel is a writer and painter and all-around creative who just wrote a new book titled Circling Love. Here is my interview with Noel Rudy. All right, I am here with Noel Rudy, writer, author, and my friend Noel Rudy. Noel, welcome back to Base Camp for Men. It's great to have you on the show again.
Thanks so much for having me. This is so fun. I'm so excited to speak with you.
Yeah, you know, I've been tracking you. Of course, I follow you, and I saw on Instagram that you were down in Australia. Probably mentioned that a little bit today, but also that you had a book, and I was like, hey, and that you were trying to get it published. And I know you're a good writer. I've read a lot of your writing, so I'm like, oh, this would be a good time to check in with you. You had done, for the listeners, a really great episode with us back in season 6, titled, it was episode 221, The Wisdom of Optimism. And people just really loved that episode. I loved that episode. And for my listeners, you know, season 6 was, I like to say that my episodes are like, I kind of treat it like music. Like my episodes are like songs and each season's like an album. So season 6 to me, it was kind of like my dark side of the moon. Like I look at season six was stacked with great episodes, yours included. But anytime I get to talk to somebody that's been on season 6, I always mention that you were part of that like Led Zeppelin 4 season that we did, where it just seemed like every conversation was relevant, just everything was great. So welcome back. You know, you've just written a book called Circling Love. We're going to get all into that. But before we start, I guess just remind our listeners kind of where you grew up, what you've done for work, which is probably a million things, right? And then also to maybe just tell us a little bit, you're getting ready to relocate to Australia, which I'm like, whoa. So maybe talk a little bit about that, and then we'll get into the book and everything else.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I was born in Portland, Oregon, and have grown up pretty much primarily in the Pacific Northwest. So I know it pretty well. And yeah, it's been an eventful childhood and eventful careers. I'd say I've had a friend, she describes it as I've lived at least 9 lives. So that's fairly true. But my last hurrah was in the advertising industry. I did about a decade of work in there. And then my last job was at Microsoft. Mm-hmm. And so that was quite an experience, a lot of learnings after being there for about 5.5-6 years. Mm-hmm. And then I quit Microsoft in January of 2024. Mm-hmm. So it's been a new adventure since then. And I've learned a lot about myself, about the world, about who I am, what I want to do. And that basically has taken me to Australia, which I just moved there 3 months ago. And I basically went for, well, I went there a year ago for a holiday. And just fell in love with it. It just hit so many different spots and lifestyles that I wanted to live. And I thought, gosh, I should move here. And I realized, oh, I could. My mom was born there, so I'm a citizen.
And, oh, nice. Yeah.
So that helped out. Yeah. So,
yeah.
Last year I spent writing the book and then also just kind of preparing life to move to across the world.
Yeah. Wow. That's great. What prompted you or inspired you to write Circling Love? Like, how did you get going on it? Was it a light bulb moment? Did you know you wanted to write a book about love? Like, what was the impetus to, you know, because I know it takes something to stick to, like, I'm going to write this thing. And what was it for you?
Yeah. So last year in January, I was kind of doing a little bit of an inventory of life and just reflection. I hadn't worked at Microsoft for about a year. And I was just checking in with myself, with my soul as to what I should do next. Should I go back into the tech world? Should I go back into the advertising world? Should I start consulting? And so I was really exploring that within myself and meditating on it and trying to figure it out. And during that time also, I was coming up a little bit off of a breakup, which didn't go as smoothly as I had planned. So the subject of love and relationships was definitely weighing on my heart at that time as well. Mm-hmm. And I had struggled my entire life since I was about 10 with the idea of what love is. And that question of, like, what is love? It was an embarrassing question to me because it seems like everybody knows what love is. It's in all the movies. It's in all the songs. It's in all the poems.
Yep.
It will save the world. But for me and my brain and my experiences, I didn't know what it was, but I just ignored that because I just wanted to fit in. Right. But that last year, it was just a bunch of enough things coming to a head where I just had to really confront it and confront that question. And I was listening to, or I was watching a documentary on some physicist, like David Bohm or something. And the documentary it wasn't great. It was poorly produced. I don't even remember what the guy did. But it did change my life. There was a scientist that was being interviewed in it, and he was talking about this physicist, David. And he was saying, you know, when he didn't know the answer to something, when he didn't understand something, he would write a white paper about it. And it was like my soul, my mind, everything just lit up and was like, oh, that's what I need to do. I don't understand love, so I need to write a book about it. Mm. And immediately, like that night, I just started writing an outline. I started planning everything. You know, I'm a writer by trade, so it's fairly easy for me to pick up a pen or whatever and get going. And so I had my outline, I was ready to go. And then that next day I happened to be listening to a podcast of, I can't remember who, but he was an author that put out nonfiction books quite quickly. And the host asked him, he said, how do you do that? Like, what's your process? And he said, well, I take about 6 months and I just research the subject. I don't even write anything. I just read everything I possibly can. And it was like, my soul nudged me with its elbow and was like, hey,
there you go.
Don't start writing, just start reading. And so that's what I did for the first half of last year, was just read everything I possibly could get my hands on, academic texts, spiritual texts, like listened to any podcasts, influencers, spoke to a lot of friends, did a lot of interviewing. And then it was magical. Like about 6 months into the process, the book was there and it just fell out.
it's a really great inquiry into what is love, because to your point, there's a lot of cliches, let's say, right? There's like, and you bring them up in the book, that's just, we're surrounded by it, but it's this mysterious thing that we all are immersed in our own ways.
Yeah.
And you go into great depth on I found it like, I know some things about you because you're a friend of mine, but I found like really leaning into the book because you're an interesting person, but then your background is super interesting. And, you know, it's kind of non-traditional, but then the learning is really juicy. I wanted to read. So I grabbed a few snippets from the book and some topics, but you know, your upbringing is not what I would say would be conventional. But a lot of people don't have conventional backgrounds, right? So you have a description of your father. You say, quote, "My father was many things: a drunk, a child molester, a rapist, a real estate agent. He was also funny, charming, and genuinely talented opera singer," unquote, which is like a really great, you know, you're like, he's a monster. Oh, wait, no, he has these other things that he's noted for as well. You know, a lot of people would be like, oh, you know, if he was around her, no wonder it was hard, or, you know, but you really humanized him by not giving in to the temptation to say, you know, my dad was a monster. He did all these things. I don't forgive him. All of the problems with love were because I had such a fucked up mom and dad, or my dad was like this. So I just have to kind of try to work with it. But my question, I guess my first question is like, even if you were to snap your fingers and be able to have kind of like a white picket fence upbringing. In other words, your mm-hmm. parents were like healthy, you know, people that, you know, your dad wasn't like that. Maybe he was a talented singer, but he didn't have all the other weird stuff, right? If you had what people would be considered, you know, like my mom and dad were kind of boring. They were Christian and they raised me to blah, 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 blah. If you would have had an easier time, or if you would even know more about love having been raised that way. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It's such a good question, and one I've really just wrestled with for quite some time. Mm-hmm. And for actually many different reasons. And one of the main reasons why it's hard for me to just say one or the other is better is I love the woman I am today and who I've become. And when I think of little Noelle, that little girl, I think she'd be pretty impressed. She'd look at my life. She'd feel safe with me. She'd be proud. And much of who I am today is from that childhood, is from that family, is from those experiences. They've shaped me. But at the same time, I would never wish my childhood on anyone. Mm-hmm. And that's the part that's really hard. Like, it's really difficult to reconcile. Like, I don't believe like suffering is inherently noble or even necessary. I don't think trauma is some magical shortcut to wisdom or anything like that. I mean, plenty of people are deeply, deeply harmed by the events in their life. But mm-hmm. I guess, you know, at the end of the day, what I do think is we're all humans and we're all just trying to survive. And sometimes these difficult experiences will force you to, I mean, I call them almost difficult opportunities, because you have an option then to ask deeper questions. And for me, that question became, what is love actually? And, you know, writing honestly about my father, it mattered to me, because flattening people just into straight villains or saints, mm-hmm. it doesn't really help. It doesn't help us understand ourselves. It doesn't help us understand them more either. Mm-hmm. Being a human is hard and it's complex, and talking about it in these fair ways, it can be uncomfortable, but at the same time, I think it's real. So I don't romanticize my upbringing, but I also don't deny that it's shaped the lens through who I am today and how I see the world.
Well, and I had done a lot of training with an organization called the Mankind Project. So they do men's weekends and stuff. And, a portion of that weekend, you're going back to grab wounds that maybe you have not addressed. And it's generally mother and father. Something's going on. And there's a lot of trauma in those. And the leaders of that organization are some of the most astoundingly dynamic, inspiring leaders, and a lot of them had really fucked up backgrounds. You know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? They're like, they were almost like an example, like you are, of like, you could come from really rough, like, you know, that, you know, I had all these things happen in my childhood, and I'm still standing here, and I'm without shame telling you this is how things went, but this is how it is now. You know, you said something there about the little girl would be proud of you. I remember hearing something or reading something that said, you only need to, You only need the validation of two people in your life, the 8-year-old you and the 80-year-old you, right? That's the only approval you need. So, you know, I wanted to ask you, you know, one of the things, one of the cliches, I guess you could say, is like, you know, you hear self-love is foundational, and then other people go, oh, no, that can be selfish or narcissistic. It's not that. It's about loving others. There's just a bunch of ways that you hear it. I'm sure you read it a bunch in the books or the podcasts, you know, and you wrote something that said, quote, I spoke to myself in ways I would never speak to a friend, unquote. And I was like, God, that really resonates. Yeah. That really resonates because I am somebody, maybe you could relate to this. Like I'm somebody like you, I do not take to disrespecting. Like you can't disrespect me. Like if you're like, I will bite your head off. I will be not so fast. But I give myself leeway to say negative things to myself in self-talk in different ways. And I've really had to work to heal that up because I just noticed, you know, I don't apply the same kind of principles to myself. Does that make sense?
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some of the things, once I started recognizing how mean I was to myself, it was scary. Just the stuff I would just criticize myself for, beat myself up over, you know, constantly telling myself I'm an idiot. And then thinking about, I would never, ever, ever even say that to a stranger.
Right, like, right.
Come close to
you'd ask anyone. Yourself, are you stoned or just stupid?
Yeah,
which exactly. Is what Dad used to say.
And so realizing that and it, yeah, going back to this idea about self-love, when I used to think of self-love as like, give me a break, you know, like bubble baths and just excuses for people to like, you know, be narcissistic or vain or just like into themselves. But then I realized self-love is not that, that can be considered like self-care or taking care of yourself. But when I do think of self-love as a foundational thing of being able to be in line with yourself and be able to present yourself wholly and fully to the world for whatever purpose that is, whatever the vessel you're supposed to be. But to do that, you really need to appreciate and love yourself and respect yourself. I also believe like, I'm a huge fan of leading by example. And so even if, you know, I'm not saying these horrible, mean things to people out in the world, but I'm saying it to myself, I'm still giving this weird example. And it's kind of just a little bit of this you know, spiral that we get into and we don't realize that we're also putting that negative energy that we're putting into ourselves is seeping out into the world in different ways too.
Yeah. You're adding to the lower vibration with your thoughts and stuff. You know, one way I've noticed over the years, and I work to be mindful and try to skillfully change it is like, I will give people, I'm a pretty non-judgmental person to a point. Like I will if you make mistakes or you screw some things up, like I will give people a lot of breathing room to kind of figure things out and stuff, but I will not give myself the same kind of grace. Like I'm like almost like I expect to know things right away or to be like, how could you still be making that same mistake? You know, and I'm a recovering addict, you know, so I have that part of my brain that like kind of acts impulsively or does things really quick and goes, well, that was not too smart. Look what you did because you were in such a hurry or whatever, right? But with other people, including other addicts, I'm like, you know, I give them tons of space. Like, just don't worry about that. Like, you know, I'm like super wise with other people. And then I can be kind of short with myself. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's, I think the best practice for me was just to first start to notice that I'm so kind to the world, but so unkind to myself. Mm-hmm. And then just even sitting with that and trying to understand what that means and like, why am I doing that? And I think that just opened up a whole new avenue, a whole new perspective on love and self-love in that way. It's like, what is the actual purpose of it? Is it really going to get us further? Is it really going to make us more disciplined or more money or more fit or be more perfect? Like, why are we being so, why can't we find some compassion for ourselves?
Right. You'd mentioned in the book that the author C.S. Lewis, he said you don't have to like someone to love to love them, and I think that's a great distinction. I can think of people like my late father-in-law was somebody like that. Like he was just a jerk. Like he was just so he was such a dick to people, you know. But he was loved. You know what I mean? Like we loved him, and warts and all, and you know, and it's like. There was a point when you realize, look, you're not going to change him. He's got this emotional immaturity that I don't prefer in people, this narcissism, but the love is there, meaning, you know, you'd go have his back in almost anything, you know, to make, you know, your family, you know, and stuff. So yeah, just maybe you could talk about that a little bit. Like we don't, sometimes we love people that maybe their personalities are not top shelf for us.
Yeah, it's when I read that, I think it was in Mere Christianity, and it just, oh my gosh, it just made my day. I was like, oh my word, I can love someone but not like them, just like some people don't like mustard, but that doesn't mean they're like stomping on it or throwing it in someone's face, like they just don't partake in mustard. And so that, yeah, it was such a cool realization, because I mean, even with your description of, you know, a guy that can be a little bit of a dick to someone or just not fun to be around, but the fact that you're seeing him and understanding like that's who he is, that you can't change him, that's you loving him, right? That's you like you're acknowledging, you're being present with him and you're letting him be himself. And it's one of the most beautiful things that we can do and beautiful ways that we can show love is to acknowledge presence and state of being. But again, that doesn't mean you have to stay around it, especially like, I know it's easy to say, I mean, I've lived through some pretty interesting experiences and I've removed myself from them. And that's not because there was a lack of love. It was because there was a lot of love and I knew I needed to remove love for myself and for that person. So it's, it's an interesting dynamic, but I just loved how C.S. Lewis put it, where it's just like, you don't have to like everyone.
Exactly. Another thing you wrote, you said, quote, nobody described love as a declaration. They described it as a practice, something accumulated and demonstrated in ordinary moments that didn't announce themselves as significant, unquote. Is this kind of, you know, most of the cliched songs and movies, it's a person, it's a declaration. There's a point where it's like, there's love, now you have it. But is it really, have you come to view it more as a journey or, you know, something that you grow over time or appreciate over time? Is it something that you get better at as you age? Like, is it really about the journey and not about finding maybe the one person or the one hobby that you absolutely quote unquote love? What have you come to realize in terms of process versus destination around it?
Yeah, I guess a good way to describe it would be, I would agree. It's more of a journey than a destination in that sense. It's not like all of a sudden, you know, you turn 28 and get married and you're like, I have found love. I think that for me, from what I've learned, like from all of my research and from all of this reflection and this process of like looking back at my life and looking forward at to where I want to go, I don't see love as a static object. And so that being said, it is more about the idea of exploration. It's not an accomplishment. It's something to be more revealed and instead of like, and not blocked. And so, I like that idea of kind of associating it more with like journey versus destination.
Yeah. You know, I saw, I kind of a sidebar on A Course in Miracles, cause you had mentioned it in the book and it'd been years. And I was like, I used to circle around A Course in Miracles and I never really did anything with it. Like, I feel like, did I miss something? And Yeah, so I saw that you had said that, yeah, you had spent some time with that, and I wanted to ask you what you got out of it. What was resonant in A Course in Miracles? I think it's a Christian practice, right? But I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, it's an interesting book, and it's interesting how it's very serendipitous with how it landed in my lap. And I was listening to some different podcasts or reading some different things, and the name had popped up. And at one point I had heard one woman say, like, yeah, you never force the book on anyone. She's like, I never would actually, like, I recommend this book to you, but when it's time, you'll know that then it's time to read it. And so I had enough of these little moments where I was like, okay, I should, you know, pick it up and see what it's about. Mm-hmm. And it's, there's the actual course. So that's one book. And then there's another book, which are lessons. And then another book, which are like teaching how to teach the course in a sense. Mm-hmm. And so I picked it up and just in the introduction. And when I picked it up was very close to when I started thinking about this idea of what love is. And I opened it up and in the introduction, it says something along the lines of like this course, aims to basically remove the blocks to the awareness of love's presence.
Hey.
And I was like, okay, I think it's really time for me to read this book.
Yeah.
But it's its own little thing. I do encourage people just to investigate it, just to see if it's something that they resonate with or not. But it's been a powerful book for me. And I do keep it on. It's my daily reader. Just in the morning, read a lesson every day. Yeah.
Okay. That's what I was kind of curious about. You know, you gave a great definition in the book of love. I'm not going to share that because that's the, you know, you gotta read the book. You gotta get the book and read the book for that. But I remember, did you ever do Landmark Forum and all that stuff? Were you ever part of that community?
No.
Oh,
I wasn't.
Well, they had an interesting definition. Yours is great, by the way, but they had an interesting definition of love that I was like, I've never heard it quite describe that, because they would point out all of the cliches, you know, and people, you know, they would ask everybody, what are the cliches of love? Come on, give us all of the movies and all of the, you know, songs. And so people would just be, you know, it just went and went and went and went. And then they're like, yeah, love is not any of those things. And then it said, and then their definition, they said, is like, love is, here is a definition of love. I accept you in all of the ways that you are and all of the ways that you aren't. Mm. And I was like, well, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. And that kind of resonates with what we talked about earlier, because I'm like, why do I love my father-in-law when he's such an a-hole?
Yeah.
But it's because I accept him in the ways that he is and the ways that he's not, right?
Yeah.
And then I can see where it's a challenge. Like, I've been married for a long time, and it took us a long time to get to that kind of definition. Right. Mm-hmm. Because I really wanted her to be a certain way. She wanted me to be a certain way. We were trying to condition the other person to change in subtle ways. But really, if we just stuck to that definition, I think there's a lot less friction. And so it to me, I was always like, that's really interesting, because I had never seen kind of a definition where acceptance of the other is maybe kind of foundational as well. And that could even be applied to yourself.
Oh, totally. Yeah, no, I love that. It for me, I fully agree with that. The only thing where I get a little bit nuanced with it, and it is more of that, I see that as a way to love, not necessarily the essence of love. Like, that's the only kind of thing I would nitpick on that. But yeah. I 100% agree. And it goes into how I end up describing how to love, which is, it's very along the same lines. And it's just like you said, it's so cool, because it applies not just to others, but to self. And really sit back. Because, I mean, growing up, I had I would look around and I'd had the life that I had lived, and I'd look at other people and see their potential. And I would just place these expectations on them, or just not, also just not understand how they couldn't do more. Like, I came from less, why can't you do more?
Right.
Or, I could see like, oh, if only they just trained a little bit harder, or if they had a little bit more encouragement, I think that they could do this, this, and this. Mm-hmm. And by doing that, I actually wasn't really, you know, you think it's like a loving thing to be encouraging and motivating to people in that way, but it's not, because it's not necessarily letting them who they are, where they're ready to go in that moment. Like, there's something to be said about, of course, being a cheerleader, but then also there's something to be said about not finding resentment when someone doesn't do something that they had no idea you expected them to do.
Right. Yeah, I think that's one of the cliches of love, is like, if we just give them a lot of positive talk, that's what they need. But it's like, sometimes there's a little bit of unacceptance in the positive talk. Like, come on, get out of this pattern you're in, or whatever. Yeah. And they're like, oh, I'm in the pattern. It's like, are you going to not love me because I'm stuck? You know, I got my foot's in the mud. I can't seem to get it out. You're like, it's so easy. Just step on the bank, you know, just get out of the mud. It's so easy. And they're like, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm just going to keep doing the same damn thing. You know, one of the things I just loved about your book, you're really funny and you're a really funny writer. And I just found myself chuckling. I don't really have a question about this, but I just grabbed it because I was like, God, that is so good. You said, quote, I am, when the situation calls for it, an excellent ignorer, unquote. I was laughing out loud. I could so relate to it. It's just like owning your, you know, codependency. You know, I can ignore stuff with the best of them, but I wanted to bring it up because I think the book is really well written and it's really funny. And even though it's this kind of like, it's part autobiographical, it's part of your upbringing and all the lessons you've learned, there's a lot of great storytelling in it, but sprinkled throughout is like this thread of like, that is a funny way to turn that phrase. So I don't know if you want to say anything about that, but I just really appreciated the humor in the book.
Well, good. Yeah, I'm glad you did. And, you know, writing this book has been an incredible journey for me. I started out writing the book just basically for myself. I was like, I need to do this for myself. And then once I finished it, I realized, well, maybe there's some people out there in the world that could also benefit from this. And not that anyone needs to agree with my definition of love, but maybe it can at least kickstart or plant a seed for them to really take a step back and look within themselves and figure out what love actually means to them. And part of the process of the book, though, was me to share my love with the world. And to do that is to be vulnerable and to be as much as myself as I can. So there's a lot of editing and re-editing and stories taken out and putting back in, and just so that I could fully put myself out there. And part of me, just who I am, how God created me, is I'm a little bit of a silly person. And so even with very serious and very dark subjects, I tend to find a little bit of the humor in it. So you'll definitely find it in the book.
Yeah, for sure. So you're trying to get it published. You're preferring the get a publisher route than quickly out as self-published, or what's going on, and like, how has that been for you? And are you set? Do you still want to have a publisher for the book, or are you starting to entertain self-publishing? Like, what's going on? And how has that been?
Yeah, it's been an interesting journey. I self-published like a journal 2 years ago, and I really wanted to go the traditional route with this. I at least wanted to give it a shot. Yeah. And so I figured I would go through the motions of trying to like get an agent, so querying a ton of agents, and then the process after that would be they then approach publishers and try to get the deal and whatnot. So I've decided to do that, and I've been working on that process for about like a month and a half or maybe 2 months or something, getting a lot of rejection letters. But the good thing is the person I am today and where I've come, like they don't bother me at all. I mean, also working in the ad industry, I'm used to a lot of feedback and a lot of rejections. So it's not a big deal. But I figured I'd go this route until I get assigned to go another way. But at least give it like the good old college try for 6 months or so and see what I and see where I go.
Well, I do think, even though we're in the age of, you know, do it yourself and self-publicating and all that stuff, self-publication, There is something. It's not a stamp of approval, but the book looks better. They push. They market it. I just think it gets. You make less money per book, but you sell more books. And I just think like books that have publishers just look. I don't want to say more like real books. You know what I mean? But because I know I self-published a book and it looks like a self-published book. I tried to not have it look at the way it does, but it does. Mm-hmm. And so there's something about, you know, the experience of a publisher and all that stuff. And yeah, I think the way that you're approaching it is great. So any last thoughts? We got to get the horse in the barn here pretty soon. Good luck in Australia. Is there anything you want to say? I can't remember if you have a website or anything where people can go maybe see some of the writing before it's a book. I don't know if you want to share that. I didn't really talk about this beforehand, but is there any place you want to send the listeners to find you and your work?
I would say probably just Instagram is the best. I'm starting to kind of try to document the journey of getting published a little bit more on there. So you can follow along for all the ups and downs and weirdness that happens.
And what's your IG handle?
Noelle Rudy. So N-O-E-L-R-U-D-H-E.
Okay, perfect. Well, Noelle, thank you so much for coming on Basecamp for Men and sharing your journey. Good luck with the book. We're on your team cheering for you. I hope that you find a publisher if that's what God is intending. And I would love to see more and more people get your book and be able to read it. And I think it'll resonate with lots of people. So thanks so much for sharing your insight and your wisdom today and taking time with us.
Thank you. I really appreciate all the work you do just for getting different ideas out there. And it's making the world a better place. So thanks, Tony.
Appreciate it.
Bye.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did. If you liked that episode and want to listen to another one with Noelle, her and I did episode 221, The Wisdom of Optimism, back in the now legendary season 6. Thank you, Base Campers, and we'll see you around the fire next week.
If you find value in our show and wish to show us some love, we are now making that very easy to do. You simply go to www.basecampformen.com and click on Donate Support Basecamp. You'll find an easy way to make either monthly donations for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate just once. We love the monthly donation and hope to build this up over the coming months, but any show of support is greatly appreciated, honestly. Thank you for your support and for helping to keep Basecamp as a resource on your hero's journey. That's our show for today. Thank you for listening. Men, good luck in all your endeavors and good luck on your hero's journey. This is Tony Rezac, and you're listening to Basecamp for Men.